Let the record show that Supervisor Esposito, Allman, and
Kubicki
have called in and they're excused. At this time, we'll open it up to citizens' comments. Citizens' comments. Anybody wishing to speak? Anybody wishing to speak? Anybody wishing to speak? Seeing none, citizens' comments are closed. Chair, Supervisor, Youth and Governance comments. Anybody?
Does this fall under our reports?
That's community, huh? Sure. You can give a report.
Oh, okay. I did meet with IT on the paperless, and we went, we had a webinar with Adam Adair from Civic Plus. He walked us through everything that the software can do for us. This the software has already been purchased by Kenosha County. I didn't realize that. But this is the new software that they are setting up our new website with. So it's already been purchased. It's a little bit more on their way than I thought it was. They're hoping to roll out the new website soon. Jim, do you know when they're rolling out the new website?
I do not.
Okay. It was supposed to be out a week ago, but obviously delays. The software has a place for uploading video or audio. It's a drop and drag. It's going to be very simple for Edie down in the clerk's office to set up the agendas and just transfer everything over to paperless. So we're still on schedule, and Mary has asked that we just wait until after the fall election.
Okay.
That's it.
All right.
Hey, Jeff.
Hello.
I'll just say at this point that
Barca already. Holy cow!
Yeah, you did.
Is he usually on time or something?
Always.
Okay.
Give him another time.
Well, I just wanted to let everybody know the reason. I think these folks are going to get busy in the coming months, and I really wanted to, as we are really the executive committee took over the legislative end of it, I really wanted to hear what they had to say, what some of their upcoming ideas are, how things relate to the county and their upcoming elections and serving us. So I thought it was a good time to bring them in and get some comments and talk with them. So that's kind of why I put this agenda together. At this point, we'll move on to any communications. I don't know that we have any of those. Approval of the July 10, 2012 minutes.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, those minutes are approved. And then we're going to do our legislative roundtable. What I'm thinking is to just give you guys like 10 minutes, up to 10 minutes to talk if you want. Talk about some of the things you're looking to do in your upcoming elections and you know, the next term, maybe how things relate to the county. Just, it doesn't have to be. We'll ask those questions, but just give us a little idea of some of the things that are on your plates. So, Bob, you want to start?
Okay. Well, I've said this before, and I will repeat it. I think we're at a chamber meeting. I think we should go back to work. It's shameful. I'm out there knocking on doors. I was out there this afternoon. There's a lot of people hurting, a lot of people either unemployed or underemployed looking for work. And we should go back into special session and help the needs of the people. You know, this governor promised 250,000 new jobs. Guess what? Every month we're losing jobs. People are hurting out there. Now let's look at what the legislature has done. We adjourned on March 15th. That's a long time ago. Now when you know how the legislature works, we come in next year, not much happens in January. You gotta wait for a budget. That might, the governor's address, that might be the end of February. By the time you have hearings, we could go a whole year without getting anything done. March 15th this year, March 15th next year. So I think it's imperative that we go back into session. We have bills out there that have had hearings. It's not like we have to start all over again. I would like to see a bipartisan mining bill go through. I think there are you know, things I've learned in the legislature, things can happen quickly if there's a will or leadership to act. It's amazing the speed that things can happen, and we need that sense of urgency. Certainly, there are economic development bills out there. Senator Julie Lassa has brought a number of bills through. Retraining, we hear from business that they want to hire people, but they can't find people with the right qualifications out there. Remember, we took $70 million out of the tech school budget. So I think in all of those areas, we simply cannot wait until next year. We should go back into session. We have to get the Republicans to come in off their summer vacation. The Democrats are willing to come in. We need the Republicans to come into session. And I think that is, of course, what we need to do in the short term. Now, clearly, if I'm reelected in November, I will bring back my election spending bill. I got it through one house before, and I will bring it back again. And I think that Terry is here, and he's a lawyer, so I'll tell him my premise for my bill. That my bill is the, I think, a realistic answer to Citizens United. And Citizens United, of course, said that corporations can spend unlimited amounts on campaigns. And my bill simply says, and I worked it out with a constitutional attorney who has since retired, the state has the right to regulate corporations. But we can only do it for state offices. So my bill says that any corporation that wants to put money into state offices, that could be governor, that could be Supreme Court, that could be attorney general, that could go down to state Senate or assembly races, must simply ask permission of their shareholders. If I own stock, Terry owns stock, corporations have elections all the time. They have proxies out there. So it would not be difficult. But it has several advantages, this bill. Number one, transparency, because by the very fact that they have election, let's say they want to put money into state races in Wisconsin, and you have to name the races, and there's a penalty on this, you have transparency. Number two, I'm old-fashioned. I own stock, and I'm old-fashioned. The stockholders own the corporation. So I think we've gotten into trouble in this country with crony capitalism, board of directors that did the wrong things. I think it's would be right for shareholders to be asked if they want to have money put into certain races. Now, I also think my bill passes constitutional muster. Why? Because if you read the majority opinion in Citizens United, Justice Kennedy says, the answer to if there's going to be any mischief in that is corporate democracy. Now, I interpret that, and our alleged counsel lawyer interprets corporate democracy as an election to authorize the money going in. And I believe at that time there was another Supreme Court justice who concurred with Kennedy on that decision. So we felt we're on good grounds because the Supreme Court just overturned the law in Montana, or they were trying to regulate corporations, but this bills off the Citizens United decision. And we saw in this last recall unlimited amounts, a record set in money being spent in this recall election. And the sky is the limit in Wisconsin on spending. And so I think my bill is very important. It's good for transparency is good for a check on the process. Now, it does not cover everything. Obviously, it does not cover privately held corporations. It does not cover billionaires that have deep pockets that want to play in elections. But, you know, one bill cannot touch all of the bases. But I think it's an important first step that will pass constitutional muster. So that's the main bill that I'm going to reintroduce if reelected next year. With that, I will defer to some of my colleagues who want to talk about their own agendas.
Samantha?
Sure. Well, thanks for, first off, thanks for having me tonight. I do appreciate it, being able to come out and talk about what I'm doing and what I have done. This summer, I'm working on a special committee on foster care. I think it's important that we reform our foster care system. As you know, the Kenosha News has recently reported, we have definitely some challenges in that system. And so Ron Rogers is serving, and then Robin Neeson locally, she's from New Summers, is on our committee. And so it's great to have their local input in that system and how to reform it, because they're trying to reform it from the inside out. Because again, I'm not an expert in foster care, so they have to turn to the people who are to reform the system. I expect about 4 to 5 bills to come out of the special committee this year. And I spent 2 weeks at, or 2 days at a conference in Chicago looking at Cook County. They had 52,000 kids in foster care. They're down to 7. And so really gleaned from them to get ideas. Again, getting kids either back home unified with their parents, giving the parents skills, or then moving them through the system quicker to get them to adoption. Again, trying to look at the system that cases in which kids need to be removed immediately. And so it really has been quite rewarding. One of the other things that we're going to be working on the next few weeks is audit. We are working in Madison. The Joint Audit Committee will be holding 2 hearings within the next month, one on food shares fraud. As I spoke about that at the legislative breakfast, if you were there, there were 2 audits that came out in the last about 8 months with regards to the food share program. The first one was on the out-of-state abuse of our program. And I did expect people in our bordering states to have a large number of out-of-state use. What I didn't expect was California, Texas, and Florida together lead the way where our food shares dollars from Wisconsin are being spent. And I thought, in looking at it, it would be months like December, February, January, or cold months where maybe you have seniors that migrate south. But actually, the largest month was August. So we have a lot to work to do. We're having a hearing on tentatively scheduled for August 28th. The next audit will be having a hearing on economic development. As the Senator said, I think economic development and job creation is critical to our state. And, looking at how we're spending our economic development dollars, we do have such, out of our whole state budget is $68 billion. We spend only a small percentage actually on trying to grow our state's economy. It's the same thing with tourism. But we have to make sure we're doing it in a smart way. And last year, under bills that we passed that came out of some of the job creation committees, we reformed Commerce, the Department of Commerce, and it's now the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, public-private partnership. So it's only been in existence for about a year. So the audit is, the most recent audit isn't looking at that, but we do want to take a look at that. And how is Commerce 2 years ago and Commerce today, or the new BDIC, how are they working? How is the outreach? You know, back a few years ago when there was a comprehensive look at our economic development programs, we had 196 different programs in 9 different state agencies. So when people used to call our legislative offices or even try to call the Department of Commerce and say, I'm a company and I do X, where do you send that particular company, that business owner who might want to expand their business or locate here in Wisconsin? So again, we're going to be taking a comprehensive look at that the second week of September is our game plan for dates. And again, trying to accommodate members in their summer schedules is very, very difficult to try to get a quorum. Right now we don't have a quorum for August meeting, so we need 1 more member. So those are some of the things in the recent weeks that I've been working on. One of the things I wanted to talk about is, you know, just working with the county. I think the relationship with County Exec Cruiser and county board members, I feel that I have a pretty open relationship where anybody can call me and ask me a question. We recently had Secretary step down. We waited until after the elections to try to coordinate with her schedule to get her down. She visited five different places in Kenosha County, projects that we've had ongoing, some that are from the county and some that are locally driven. And she was very impressed to the ski hill. It was our first stop. And what they've done out there with the tubing run, and I know the county, Cobb has played a strong role in that expansion out there. She was just blown away. And then blown away to the fact that how close Illinois is. And actually, you know, the ski hill actually partially sits in Illinois. So when you try that to explain that to colleagues that, you know, how close I am to the Illinois border, it is challenging. And that there is an Illinois factor. You know, they say that, you know, 50% of the people who live south of Highway 50 are Bears fans. So, you know, it's a, you know, even
let's hope that's an incorrect statistic.
I have some of my own family, unfortunately. So, but those are just a few of the things, you know, we're also watching, you know, nationally. Congressman Paul Ryan has been picked as the VP. So I apologize, my voice is a little hoarse. I kind of have a sore throat. I happened to be at an event with him the other day, and I got to talk to him for 3 seconds. So, you know, I tried to call their office the other day because there are some things, you know, with the food shares program in particular, that it just can't be a state change. And so you have to coordinate and work together with the federal government on some of these changes. So.
Can you ask the question?
Oh, certainly.
Sam, on your foster care reform, the committee that you have formed, do you have any of the foster parents sitting on that committee to help with this?
Yes, and that's where Robin Neeson, she's a local foster parent, and okay. She's also adopted. She's been
okay.
A foster mom, and then she's adopted. And then Senator Lozick has a constituent of hers, Laura, from Racine County. So again, from some of the anecdotal stories that we've heard, Racine and Kenosha are so different because it is a county-run system. It's great to kind of gauge best practices, mm-hmm. I should say. And then, you know, being able to see what Cook County was doing is just quite incredible.
Yeah.
The judges came to, we had three judges come to speak about it, and they seemed to really lead that discussion in Cook County. It did come from the judges. Obviously, the legislature still had to act,
mm-hmm.
but some of the reforms kind of were led from the inside out. So, and one other thing I did want to mention, Doug Bartz, at the legislative breakfast, Barb Walsh, who works at the Job Center, talked about the national certification for jobs. None of us really at the table knew exactly what it was, so I had arranged a meeting and actually went over and met with her. And it's quite a nifty thing to get certified. It shows that you're job ready. And my staff has actually looked in and taken the practice exam online. So again, she really is an advocate for the Job Center. And then Doug obviously sat in the meeting. He's a new Job Center manager. And actually gave some suggestions. One of the more recent bills that was passed bipartisanly was the Wisconsin Winds Bill. And there are some issues with that program. Now, some of it can't be changed because of how unemployment is set up, but we could possibly ask for waivers from the federal government on that. So, again, I've been in communications with him, too. And he seems to be a great resource for you guys as a new person coming in, bringing some fresh ideas, too.
Gary?
Bob, on your idea for special session I think is a good idea provided that there's a commitment on the part of the Republicans and the Democrats to work together to compromise for some common goal. I haven't seen that in state or federal politics for years. You go to Washington or Madison, you state your position, and that's it. There's no compromise. That's got to change. I think the general public is sick and tired of the Democrats and Republicans at state and federal level not getting things done through compromise. You know, the classic example of Eisenhower president, Lyndon Johnson, the leader of the Senate, and Sam Rayburn, the House of Representatives speaker, their commitment was to get things done for America. That's not true anymore. And I think the message has got to be sent to Madison and Washington, you've got to compromise. Because who suffers? We suffer. These are the people that are unemployed, not those in Washington. not those in Madison. And the second thing I think that needs to be addressed at the state level is the declining state average income for average people, and it is tied to the fact that while we have fine universities and colleges in this state, people who have degrees are leaving this state. There are no jobs for them. So we have a declining educational level and a declining average income level. I don't see that being talked about and addressed. I think it's one of the very prime issues in this state today.
Now, Terry, I just talked about that. I said retraining was one of the three things that we wanted to get done in a special session. And you talked about the declining average income. These are high-level jobs, well-paid jobs that are unfilled in this state because we don't have people who have the qualifications to fill them. And business is sending that message to Madison. So we can't wait till next year. We have to talk about how we can pump some money into the tech school system and get those jobs filled. That helps business. That helps average income. That helps our state. And as far as working together, I don't always agree with Mark Miller, but the first thing he did when we took the majority was invite Republican leaders out to supper, and let's talk informally on how we can get things done. So we've made overtures to the other side since the recall when we went into the majority.
Terry, you have the floor. Anything else?
No.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Steinberg, you're up.
Good evening. Thank you for inviting me here, too, also. I think you know my participation as a state legislator and a village president gives me that unique perspective on how local governments actually carry a lot of the weight in creating jobs and economic development throughout the state. And probably one of the saddest things we've seen over the last year is the division within the state, and it's still divided. And the fact that we went almost a year and really accomplished nothing. The economy just kind of sat there because there was this turmoil, this large distraction, and the unwillingness to work together. And that was basically, unfortunately, from one side, which was driven by an outside agenda, which I think now they've mostly completed that, so maybe we can get down to some real business in the state and do what it really needs to be done to create the jobs and to improve the economic situation within here. And one thing I know from my experience on the local level, and you know that also from the county level, is when we work together with the state, we can get a lot done. We can attract companies. Because on the local level, we provide that infrastructure and the education possibilities. And, we talk about education and we talk about creating jobs and training. When they dedicated the IMET up at Racine for Gateway Technical College, which is a great thing because now we're going to really look at serious job training, and Gateway's taken the lead on that. And unfortunately, they suffered some budget cuts, which they couldn't actually do the programs all they need to do, but hopefully some of that's going to get restored in the near future. And we're going to see more job training out there is what people want to see when they come in. We've got a lot of good people in this area to do the job, but they don't have the proper training or skills. But if we can provide that, big things are going to happen. And what they talked about, one of the things was Bucyrus Erie, and they're now Caterpillar. And a lot of welding jobs went to the state of Texas. Those could have been in the state of Wisconsin. All we had to do was train and retrain people to do that work. Those jobs would have been here. Those are the good paying jobs we keep talking about. And that's the kind of job and growth expansion we want to see. Whether it happens in Milwaukee or Pleasant Prairie or Kenosha County or City of Kenosha, it affects the whole southeast region. We all benefit from it. And, there was a willingness at one point. The envelope was pushed pretty far last fall or last spring with the budget. And we could have actually came to a compromise and resolved a lot of the ill will that was out there. But the emphasis wasn't there to do that. And like I said, they wanted the whole loaf. And they got it. And the unfortunate thing is we suffered economically throughout the state. We're still attracting jobs into southeast Wisconsin, especially Kenosha County, because we work with the county executive, we work with the city, the mayor, and we work with the village and everybody else involved. And COPPA plays a big part in that. So we have the resources to attract the jobs in here. They come looking. We keep hearing Wisconsin's this tax hell and nobody wants to come here. Well, it's kind of funny when you see a company like Uline come here, when you see Abbott looking to locate here. We see the companies that have come here. They've done their homework. They know what the tax situation is. So you can make taxes look any way you want on paper, how you look at them. But this is still a good area and a good state to develop in and to bring your business and your company to, and companies are doing that. We have more of them we're talking to. So it's not over. I mean, they're still looking to come here because we have a lot to offer. One is the supply of power we have here, the water resource we have here, the location between Milwaukee and Chicago. We're a prime location. We just have to have the resources to do it. And we need the state to make sure we have the resources. There was nothing wrong with the way the old department in Madison did the job. They did the job quite well because under their leadership, we brought a lot of good companies into the state. You know, this is one of those new things driving that we have to change. But change wasn't always the best thing. See, I knew I was early.
Oh, sorry, I'm a little late. Just drove in from Madison.
We can work together coming in the future. We always did that before. And we did work together on a couple things. I worked with Sam on the TID bill. That was important. That's going to create this third large building for Uline, 1.25 million square feet. More jobs, more good-paying jobs, you know. And why would Uline want to build that here if this is such a tax hell? You know, they're right at the state border. They came from Illinois to Wisconsin. They could have located any state in the union. They chose Wisconsin. So the other thing I hope for is people quit this thing about the awful state Wisconsin is for taxes. Because the people maybe that don't do the research, we're driving them away. And we're hurting ourselves when they make this kind of rhetoric out there. So I think we can be a little more positive, actually tell the truth out there maybe, quit playing politics. You know, on the village level, I work with Republicans, I work with Democrats. I might be the only Democrat there, I'm not sure, but we get along. We don't play politics, and we get good results. And I think you see that in the county board, you see that on the city council to get things done. And that's what's important. And if the folks up at the state can learn to play nice again, like we used to work together, to compromise, we can do a lot of positive things. We can really move this state forward instead of the bickering, the fighting, the secrecy. You know, that's got to stop. And Wisconsin's got to be grown by themselves and not from an outside agenda that keeps tearing this state apart. So if we can get beyond the outside influences and really pull together, there's a bright future ahead for us. And that's one of the things I'm looking forward to is working together again. Because like I said, there was a year where really we hurt ourselves and we embarrassed ourselves in the eyes of the nation. And that's a sad scenario for what happened here. But we're slowly recovering. We're still working together on a local level. We're still getting things done. And we're proof that it can happen. So we don't want to ruin any of the good things we've done. And hopefully the state keeps sending the money down to the local communities because it's the money part that we need. And to quit taking away powers from us and taking them up to the state, you know, they want to talk about smaller government. But it's unfortunate. You saw the government in Madison actually grow over the last year, which is ironic. You know, they preach one thing, but another thing happens. So if we can kind of return to our basic roots, we can get things done.
You know, John, you talked about us getting things done on the local level, and we have been. And I think the local level, the county and the local municipalities, working independently with each of you goes very well. Samantha mentioned representatives or secretary's step coming down. We have some projects we're working on. She worked very well with us. Samantha coordinated those things. Pleasant Prairie, you mentioned, you and Uline and the CABA, and we all know Gordon Foods, things I worked on, things that have really Rust-Oleum, you know, where the county puts in the roads, and that all works very well. But when it gets to the state level now, Terry mentioned, it's an embarrassment.
It is.
And I thank God every day I never had to join a political party. I've never belonged to one. And I wouldn't. These two parties are an embarrassment, the way the state of Wisconsin runs itself. And in the old days, it wasn't. You know, you could run into a guy at the feed store. He was a Republican. This guy was a Democrat. And things still got done. And I don't see that happening in the state of Wisconsin. Both parties this past year were an embarrassment. So, we continue to work. We continue to work well with each of you. But your party's leadership and the people pumping the money into the parties don't seem to care about the state of Wisconsin.
Well, let's remember, too, that up until 6 weeks ago, Republicans controlled the Assembly, the Senate, and the governors. So they had virtually all the power. So when you talk about the two parties didn't get along, one party had all the power, and the other party, well, we complained. We were not in on decision-making for the last 2 years.
Right, but you were for the previous, so...
Exactly.
I'm just saying, as a person that does not belong and would be embarrassed to belong to either party, this is my opinion.
We go back and you talk about Tommy Thompson and the people he surrounded himself with.
Correct.
That could get the job done, which kept the state moving forward. That's what we're missing, is people to actually work out there, negotiate, work together, not say, I'm taking all the marbles, so I'm going to do what I want to do. Unfortunately, that's been the scenario, and especially the last year.
I'm hoping Tommy won his primary today.
We'll find out.
I'm not saying I'd vote. I'm not saying I'm going to vote for him, but I'm hoping he won the primary, so we have a chance at something.
Looks like a 15% turnout. So
well, let me add to the points the other two made, and I apologize I couldn't be here sooner. I drove in from Madison and had a pretty full slate of activities today. But two things I would say, to pull further with Bob Wirtgen, what John Steinberg said. When I served in the legislature for five terms from the mid-'80s to the mid-'90s, almost all of that was under split government rule, with Governor Thompson for most of the period, a Republican governor and a Democratic legislature. And during that tenure, we were able to work together because there was an interest on both sides to have give and take. I chaired the Welfare Reform Conference Committee. I worked very closely with Governor Thompson, where we found a middle ground to accomplish our mutual interests, where we had developed the work fair program and where we said people should work, but if they work, they should be better off by working than not working. So we give people an incentive. And that's the way it should be. But I also want to second, to some degree, what Senator Wirtgen said in this respect. There was no interest on the part of the Republican leadership. And this will sound partisan, but it's not. All you have to do is go to the tapes. Wisconsin I tapes our sessions. They also tape when we appear before groups. And I, because I'm a leader, I appear before the groups with Senator and Speaker Fitzgerald quite regularly. And these are my words. This is what Senator Fitzgerald said. He said, compromise is overblown. Compromise is what got us into the mess that we've been in for the last 20 years. So what we needed to do is we needed to push our agenda to get through these changes. Now, right or wrong, we can disagree or disagree with the changes. I'm happy to talk about any of them at any point. But what he freely acknowledges, and he's not the only one. I can cite speeches we gave before the realtors, before the counties association. In fact, County Executive Jim Cruiser spoke right after me. You can attest to that. That's what the word was. They had no desire to have any compromise these last 2 years. Zero. So as a consequence, you're not going to come to any accord. You're going to have discord then. I'll give you another example. I served at the governor's request. I served on the Venture Capital Task Force. It was chaired by Secretary Buer, Tommy Thompson's secretary for a number of different departments. Somebody I have an enormous respect for. On that commission was Senator Darling, Republican, Senator Lassa, a Democrat, myself, and Representative Klinke. And then a member of the biotech industry, Kevin Conroy, who runs a couple different biotech companies. And we came to a consensus, not an agreement, a consensus, though. The only person that didn't agree was Representative Klinke, because the Republican leadership in the Assembly, not that they all felt this way, but Speaker Fitzgerald obviously felt this way, that unless they could get the cap goal, which, you know, I chaired the audit committee last session. Samantha's on it. She chairs it this session. Was an abysmal failure. But they insisted that it had to be in there. Now, all the rest of us on this commission agreed with this. So you would think, well, obviously you're going to put this forward and you're going to pass it. But, unfortunately, that's not what happened. That's just one example. Now, so I guess I just want to bring up those points to illustrate the fact that, you know, I can extend my hand to Terry Rolls, but if he doesn't want to shake it, you're not going to get anywhere. So I'll repeat again. I have tried, and I know we all in this room have tried, you know, to forge agreements, and as Representative Steinbrink so articulately said, in the local level, we've been able to work things out. But, you know, I can just say that for the last 2 years, it's very clear, not by my assessment, but by the words of the Republican leadership in these commissions. Go to Wisconsin Eye, they're well documented, they had no desire to compromise. So that would be my assessment of what took place. Hopefully that'll change the next couple of years. You know, I've met with the governor regularly. We get along fine. We have very civil, professional, respectful meetings. But, you know, you can meet all you want. If you can't say, look, I'll give a little bit, you give a little bit, you're not going to come to any accord. So, you know, that's my, you know, that's what transpired from, you know, just from what actually happened.
Blake? Okay, thank you. Just regarding the current discussion going on here about just all the political division and things like that, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that, I mean, everybody in the state, you know, they have fundamental disagreements and things like that. And I know the on the Republican side, I would agree, and I'm a conservative myself, I would agree that they're pushing a very, like, non-compromise agenda. But I think right now it's, quite frankly, it's kind of a waste of time to just talk about a lot of the past maybe disagreements and, you know, hardships that we've had, you know, compromising. And I what I kind of want to know is, you know, what kind of nature politically, you know, do you guys need to maybe reach compromise? Like, what kind of things need to be in place? What kind of things maybe in the past have been in place, you know, where you guys were better able to, you know, reach compromise and things like that? Because, quite frankly, I mean, just, and I'll, you know, I'll say even from a conservative standpoint that, you know, just staying, being almost hell-bent on one side, it does not do anything to further business. It actually promotes, you know, almost fear. They say, well, when are my legislators going to start, you know, working for me and just caring, rather than caring about themselves? It doesn't do anything to help confidence. So I just kind of want to know, you know, what things can we maybe all kind of try to strive for?
And I guess I want to follow, because, again, kind of talked on that side. You know, 96% of the bills that passed last legislative session had bipartisan support.
Sure.
So some of the bigger issues, mining, a couple of the jobs bills, definitely there's some philosophical differences, and there's even differences amongst our own parties. And that was the way when the Democrats were in control as well, and we were in the minority. So it goes both ways. It's not just one party or the other party. And there's a lot where we find compromise. I'll just say on my foster committee, I have Senator Lozick. She's a Republican, but we have Jill Billings. She's a new legislator. She brings a county. She came from a county board experience in La Crosse, and Representative Grigsby, who's a former social worker, who's going to be leaving. You know, and we're not going to find compromise on everything on this committee, but there is a discussion. And how I run things and run my committees is to listen to both sides. I always do that. I think that's critical. Be it on audit or foster care or ways and means or any of the committees that I serve on as chair. So I have never been like that. But yes, there are some people who have specific ideas and agenda, and the governor does, and Governor Doyle did, that you're not going to find compromise on. And it's sad that other things that we're working on don't get reported. Kenosha News still hasn't reported that I'm chairing the special committee on foster care, even though it's a critical issue to our county because we always need foster parents to take in kids. So, you know, I think there are a lot, and it's unfortunate that we're always talking about the negative and we don't talk about the positive. So
I
appreciate your perspective.
I'm sure the media and things like that, I'm sure they want to focus on, you know, divisive things. So it may just be the kind of image that everybody sees, but...
Well, let me comment a little bit. First of all, this governor came in, and they controlled both houses, and they felt they had a mandate. Now, what's the first thing they did? $2.3 billion in tax breaks for corporations and rich individuals. get rid of jobs. You know, if at this point we're still losing jobs after they put their major initiatives in, where are the jobs? That's why it's imperative for us to go back to the drawing board, to go back to special session. All I can say is you talk about compromise. I've been in the legislature since 1993. We have compromised when there is divided government. And the Democrats are just as guilty as the Republicans. And Sam mentioned it before. When Doyle was in, he controlled both houses. You know, the dominant party doesn't want to compromise. The best thing for compromise, the best thing for working government, I think, is to have divided government. In other words, Democrats maybe control one house, Republicans control. Because they're forced to compromise on major issues or nothing's going to get done. You had the two Fitzgerald brothers and the governor. And so there was one-party government. And one-party government I've seen during the time I've been here just doesn't work. And especially when you're more partisan. The Republicans have purged the moderates out of their party. I talked to John Antaramian, and he said, well, yeah, when I was up there, they maybe had 30, maybe 40% moderates in the Republican Party. Now, 10%. So you say, why are we more partisan? We purge the moderates out of one party.
Let me just respond to you, though, Mike. You asked more prospectively, like,
sure.
Where can we look forward
to
a positive agenda? Now, you know, for myself, of course, most of my efforts have been in the economic development arena. You know, I headed the Midwest for the SBA, and I, you know, ran a company as well. And so when I wake up in the morning, that primarily what I think about is how can we put people back to work? Obviously, you know, we've been reeling with bad jobs numbers for a long time now. And to me, whether you're a conservative or whether you're a progressive, whether you're in the middle, you know, more, I think we all agree to the degree to which you can put people back to work, it's far better. People can support their families. Obviously, it generates more tax revenue. You have less of a drain on social services, things of that sort. So some of the things that I think are just vitally important in that arena, by far, in my judgment, the most important thing we can do, which I know the governor agrees with the concept of it. We're still working through the details, but that's a close the skills gap. You know, President Obama's Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, did a study. They found there's 2 million jobs in America that could be filled like that if people just had the skills to perform the jobs that were available. Now, you think about what could happen, even in a state like Wisconsin, it's about 40,000 to 50,000 jobs that if we could close that skills gap would be extremely positive. Now, we put forward a package working with the vocational college presidents from Kenosha and from La Crosse and Waukesha and Milwaukee and the district boards council to have a private-public partnership. Now, that's just one idea. There's other ideas as well. One of the things the governor did do, which I agree with, is, you know, trying to have more job fairs and that, which I think they're a plus, and emphasizing veterans, you know, trying to get veterans back in the workforce, which is also a very big plus. But we have to be far more aggressive, in my judgment, than we've been. You know, in Gateway Technical College, we've had some very successful boot camp type programs where you can train people quickly in, 12, 16, 18-week programs, and then they're prepared then to go take the jobs that are available. And so to me, I think that's by far one of the single biggest thing that we can do. The second thing I would cite is entrepreneurial support. In fact, you know, I'm on the board of directors for the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. I met with Lisa Johnson, who is the head of that division at WEDIC just last week, in fact, with Gordy Casale and Racine, which is now part of my district, incidentally. When we talked about, you know, different initiatives that we can have, because, you know, it's one thing, obviously we want to attract companies to Wisconsin, but more important than that, in my judgment, is to help homegrown companies, you know, to get the investment dollars, to get the kind of technical support so they can grow and expand their businesses right here in Wisconsin. Normally, companies that start in Wisconsin are going to stay in Wisconsin. Right. Companies that move here, they could move somewhere else 2 years from now. The third arena that I'm going to cite is in international trade. You know, that's something I did professionally. I ran an international project management group. We did a lot of work overseas. We have, in every embassy around the world, we have foreign and commercial workers. Their job is to identify potential products and needs and services that American companies could export to. And I think we need to have a much tighter system in Wisconsin to be able to identify those opportunities for Wisconsin businesses and help them to fulfill those needs. So just to answer your question directly, which I agree with totally, let's look at where we can put some energies that could really pay some dividends. And that's where I've got a lot of my focus. I'm working with many of the governor's staff that are on the WEDIC, staff commissions, and that's what we're trying to accomplish. So hope that answers
your
question.
Yeah, and I know
all right. I'm going to rein this in now and now take the focus off. I think it, just based on the discussion we've had, you can see some levels of frustration just from taxpayers and the public and what's going on in, at the state. And while I respect everybody sitting at this table, what's happened in the past is in the past. And I think, Bob, you're right. Our people out there are bleeding. And we really need to work to, I almost think the whole class system has moved down one. And everybody's struggling. And what I want to hear is, first of all, from now till the end of the meeting, we're going to talk about county issues and how we can work together. But I think the whole discussion to this point, I've been able to pick little things out of what each of you said, from the jobs to the tech money to the foster care to the different things that I agree with 100%. But what we need to do is get everybody to agree. I understand politics, and I'm with Supervisor Alverman. If I could find a bunch of moderates that would get in a room and work together, no matter what they are, God bless them. Unfortunately, we're in the system we're in. And I really think that we really need to pull together as local municipalities, and that's why you're here tonight, because I want to have that tether with working together with the state to help us. And I think that's what we need to do.
Jeff, you're correct. What's in the past is in the past, and there is frustration. And what we want to see is not a repeat of what the past has been. We'd like to go farther back into the past when there was open discussion, open dialogue. We bring up Governor Thompson because we had that. We would all sit down. We would work through those things. We'd work through regulations to make things better for businesses. And we did a little of that with Governor Doyle, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, both sides had good ideas and good bills, and we had a lot of them that sat there and never came forward. And that was part of the frustration because we knew they would work. We knew what the local communities needed and what businesses were asking for. And we could never bring those forward. And that's where the frustration comes
from. And I understand that. And I'll bet you $1 million right now that Democrats have some good ideas.
Yeah. But the
and I'll bet you Republicans
part,
do too.
The saddest part is some of the best people with some of the best ideas are no longer there because the frustration weighed so heavily on them. They said, I'm done. I'm out of here. Representative Staskunas, I can name a bunch of them. Both sides. And that's unfortunate. Those were the people that could work together, do things, and come up with a real product at the end that really everybody was a winner. But they're not there anymore.
We need to work forward.
What county issues in particular do you want to highlight? I know, our county executive does come to Madison regularly and does an excellent job. Well, he does an excellent job of sort of keeping us apprised of various issues as they develop. And so I'm just curious in terms of what,
okay.
Do you have three or four issues you want us to focus on? Or?
Okay. I'm going to let Terry and then the county executive talk, and then I have some issues I'd like to talk about. Yeah, go ahead, Terry.
To me, what our number one issue here is we don't have decent jobs, good paying jobs. We have too many $8 and $10 an hour jobs that one can take, but you can't support a family with an $8 or $10 job.
Mm-hmm.
$10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to live at home with your parents. We're just not getting enough economic development. And if you look in the city particularly, as opposed to Pleasant Prairie or Summers, the city has not developing jobs. There's tremendous deterioration going on in this city.
Neighborhoods less so than Summers and Pleasant Prairie. You're
what's
saying?
That?
You're seeing the city less so than
yes.
Summers and Pleasant Prairie.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
We're not getting the jobs in the city.
Mm-hmm.
You may have the economic development in Pleasant Prairie doing very well, or to a lesser extent in Summers, not in the city of Kenosha.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of neighborhood deterioration here is profound. If you count Somebody should count up the number of businesses that have closed in Kenosha County in the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. It would be astonishing, the number of businesses. Mm-hmm. You walk around the city and look at the number of homes in every single neighborhood, mm-hmm. vacancies, foreclosures. It is rather shocking. In the best of neighborhoods, in the worst of neighborhoods. Very little is being done on this. Mm-hmm. Very little is being done.
Mm-hmm. Right, let me echo what Terry is saying. I do a couple radio programs, WLIP and WRJN. Last week, I talked about after knocking on doors and running into all these people that want to work, that are underemployed and unemployed, I talked on both shows about healthcare things, the prescription drug programs out there for people who have nothing, and other things in the safety net that have kind of fallen through. We've had more calls on that issue. People calling in, asking for information. The last 2 weeks, I talked to my staff. There's a lot of people hurting out there that are just holding on. Good people, construction workers that I run into, they're just hoping for any work to come along that they might be an extra person on the crew. So I agree with what Terry said about the deterioration in our cities because of lack of jobs. We've done good. John Steinbrink has done an excellent job bringing U-Line in. How many jobs now?
800
jobs we've brought in.
600 in the office, 200 in the warehouse.
Good paying jobs, $40,000 to $60,000 jobs. That's 800 right there, and they're going to expand. So out in Pleasant Prairie, they've done a good job, but in the city, we're hurting.
I just wanted to thank you for coming tonight. This doesn't happen around the state where all the legislators show up. One side does, or the other does, or they come and they go. And I just want to thank you all for being here. I will tell you, we were taught by somebody who started in the legislature in 1976, Senator Joe Andrea, and we all learned under him, mm-hmm. you circle the wagons when it comes to your own community. The other thing that's unique about the group here tonight is they have all hired well. Staff that serves our community well, they're very talented, know their way around, and are able to acquire the information in a speedy fashion to get it back to us. We've gotten millions and millions of dollars just in the last handful of years. Transportation aid, over $1 million in stewardship funds for the county, millions of dollars in human services, millions and millions of dollars in human services. And all these people had credit in that because they knew it was for Kenosha. These are specialized things, not the ones that go to every county. So I appreciate that because I tend to call them with some frequency on different issues, and they're very helpful in getting things done. Tonight's election night. We're on the 6th election night. February's a budget. And then next June 30th or early July will be the budget adoption. As we've seen in the past budgets, we've seen community and youth aids cut for the counties, or a modest increase, but the increase at the institutions outweighs the increase that we get in them. So we're losing ground there. Victim witness used to be charged, reimbursed at a very high percentage, and I think last year 50%, it's down to 43%.
So what were the numbers again?
It went from 50% to 43%.
43,
yeah. I read that. I just have it on my desk. State reimbursement for highways is an issue as people are concerned, and we're able to get by, but any further cuts to the state maintenance program, an I-94 state program, you're just going to have to field more calls about the grass not being made. Probation and parole holds have been around since I was in the legislature about not full funding those from the state. And of course, there'll be many other items, and all of those arms of government. When we do more, either we don't serve people or we have to pick up the balance. What I'm interested in is, maybe what are your two or three top county issues that you feel you have a passion for, and where you feel that is maybe most in danger, or one that sees a crack of daylight in the future of how we're moving forward?
Anybody want to respond to that?
Sure, I can start. I think for me, when I think of county issues, I think of a couple different things. I think of what you brought up in terms of youth aids, community aids. I know that really adds up. I mean, that's a lot of money. You're providing support for services that could be done at the state level, could be done at the county level, but the county government was created largely to perform these kind of duties. And so it is very important to have a healthy support structure there in terms of funding. I mean, for you to balance your budget, obviously, if you keep getting cutbacks, it's almost impossible. So, that's something that, during the budget process, we work pretty closely trying to track each one of these things. Lori Staves does a great job for you guys in a county level. And then the other thing, obviously, is, is a road infrastructure and other infrastructure issues. For economic development, you have to have a solid road structure. You have to have other solid kinds of infrastructure. So I think that's also very important. And, we did have some pretty good success when we had stimulus money given to us by the federal government for road projects. We got a pretty fair number of road projects. We got one on, going with the highway end there for, the food distribution plant, money for the, the old Sharon Road there, things of that sort. And quite a few different projects that were on the list that we really went to bat for to try and make sure that we could get that back. I know, of course, John, chaired the road highway committee during that period, and that was certainly a big plus. And we, but working together, those are the things that I think from a county level, are very important. Now, certainly what Supervisor Rose brings up is vitally important because as I start off my statement earlier, obviously I think jobs drives everything because if people aren't working and they can't afford to provide for their family members, well then that's where youth aids kicks in. That's where community aids kicks in. You got to provide a social safety net. And but if you can have people work, there's less of a demand for those kinds of services. So to me, that's where I spend most of my time and energy. Samantha, or
when I walk through our wonderful job center, I believe there's a sign up on the wall. It's directly along it. 20% of our population is under the poverty level.
20%?
1 in 5 of people in Kenosha live under the poverty level. So what concerns me,
wow,
we have a governor and we have a Representative Ryan that both want to slash Medicaid. And I'm out there walking the neighborhoods, and there's people holding on by their fingertips. And believe me, if they have their wish with the Ryan budget and what Walker wants to do, slashing Medicaid, people are going to die. It's that simple. And we have to remember that. So I want to sustain certainly the programs for those 20% people in Kenosha that are under the poverty level until we can turn things around. I worked in a factory. I had it made. When I got out of high school, there were 10 good factory jobs around this town. They're all gone now. They're all gone, and we have people fighting over minimum wage jobs, fighting over, like Terry said, those $8 to $10 an hour jobs out there with no benefits. And I talk to people on the street, and you can be a temp forever. They work you as a temp, but they don't hire you. And no benefits and stuff like that. So I'm concerned about the social safety net for people who want to work but simply have no benefits in their jobs.
Kenosha County has always led the way in all these pilot programs, and the city's done that, but mostly the county, and they've been successful. And sometimes we see cuts to those programs, and that's what hurts, is because we know they're working, and we keep them working. Everybody benefits. And as Bob said, you can see it out on the street. And I think the biggest impact from the last year is yet to hit us. The teachers that have been cut. The government workers, the public people that have had their cuts to their insurance, they're paying more. Everybody's paying more. And they still have the same bills that everybody else has. They have mortgages. They have children going to school and to college. So that's going to affect their bottom line as to what their individual spending is going to be. And that's going to hurt us on the retail end. because you're going to see less buying power out there. You're going to see that every little bit going backwards hurts us. And we have to somehow or another overcome that. And that's pretty hard, as Terry said, when you're creating minimum wage jobs. You need the better jobs. You know, high-speed rail was one of those third rail things everybody talked about. And the sad part was it got promoted as a high-speed train that ran between Milwaukee and Madison. And almost everybody agreed, why do we need a high-speed train between Milwaukee and Madison? But it was more than that. It was that rail that went from Chicago to Milwaukee to Minneapolis that was going to bring in those better, higher-paying jobs. We would have benefited from it. Madison would have benefited. Milwaukee. All through the state where that rail would have ran, they would have benefited. But unfortunately, we turned that money back. And we had to turn around and get money to repair the existing rail, which was kind of ironic. But, you know, there's opportunities out there. And you can argue it both ways what it was, but it was an opportunity if you want higher paying jobs that was missed in this state. And that didn't go away. That money didn't go back to the taxpayers. That rail's probably going to run across Illinois and up through Iowa to Minneapolis. And guess where the better jobs are going to locate? Across Illinois, up through Iowa to Minneapolis. And we're going to be sitting here with nothing. And that's not how you get ahead. So, I mean, there's things we can do. And I think that's going to hurt a lot of counties, not only ours, but a lot of counties throughout the state. And, you know, you guys have your cuts. The highway especially, you look at what snow plowing out there. You know, the people call and they say, well, how come my road isn't plowed? You know, we don't plow. And what happens? The snow gets packed down, turns to ice. The next morning, we got I don't know how many accidents. And we send our crews out, and they do a great job. But you're fighting a losing battle because the ice and the pack is already there, and we're saying, well, how are we going to get the bare road? How are we going to get these people going? How are we going to eliminate the accidents? You know, that money has to stay for us to do that. State cut back one time. It lasted only a few weeks. And pretty soon the people up north, there was so much screaming and hollering, the snow plowing went back the way it was. So the little things we keep cutting, you know, the weeds are an annoyance, and we don't like it because we're trying to market our communities. Kenosha's trying to market the county, the cities, this village, all the towns. So when people drive through, it looks like a ghost town. You got all the grass growing up, you know, everything else. So we're all doing our part to make sure that gets mowed, and we've worked together on that with the county and the different municipalities to make sure each one's taking a turn and we kind of get that done so things look good. Because we're marketing ourselves out there. And we're doing that to get the better paying jobs, to get the companies that want to come in here and locate, because we have everything else. But appearance is a big part. And we have to keep up a good appearance.
Well, Peter, you go ahead.
I just want to add in and chime in on the three issues that I think that are most important to the county, because I think there are issues. One of the things I'm watching is the economic support specialists. Right now, we're seeing in Kenosha, the Tri-County effect of have to coordinate their services. And again, I was able to secure the additional $3 million to help keep us held harmless this last go-around. And I'm talking to some of the folks at the job center and folks on the front line, and there are some hiccups, and the Isaac, I think, has been aware of some of those as well, and I think that is one of my priorities to watch. The other thing, also at the job center, you know, some of the information that I found from Barb, you know, 71% of the small businesses in Kenosha County have less than 10 employees. So again, these are people that don't have large, you know, there's not 50 employees, there's not 100 employees or 800 employees. They're 10 people or less, and they are struggling to get by. Workers' comp, unemployment comp, all those types of things. They just got hit with a higher unemployment comp bill because we had to pay back $1 billion to the federal government that we borrowed in the unemployment insurance fund. So when I'm talking to people that are trying to expand, they're just trying to hold on right now because of those challenges. And then the third thing, and when they hit it again, is the foster care system. Again, it's a passion of mine. There's a group of people down here in Kenosha County that want to reform the system, helping to reform the system. Again, it's a county issue because, again, every county does it differently. I think you guys do it better than most counties, but I'm intrigued by La Crosse County and some of the things that they're doing. So, those are the three county issues that I think that are critical to this upcoming legislative session. And they're large dollar. I mean, the economics support specialists, it's a huge dollar amount to the county budget.
Peter, I would say they all are strong advocates of Riverside Care Center.
You did. You asked if we had any ideas as well on it, and I'm glad the county exec asked you guys for some ideas, because I really want to take this more towards what we can do together. And I think the number one thing is the jobs. And my first thing when I was elected chair was to meet with Todd Battle from CABA and see where we could work on some economic development. I talked to the tech schools and, you know, the cuts at the tech schools. And there's a number of, you know, where employers are saying we need welders or something like that. The boot camps are a great start. We need to expand some of those programs. We need to be ready so that when those businesses do come in and they say, hey, we need this pool of workers, that we have them, or we can get them going fairly quickly. Jobs is critical. I mean, just like Terry said, you got to be able to feed your family and get out there and work. I think that's a huge thing. Also, since I've been a county board supervisor, I've realized that the taxpayers are the shareholders, and we're like a Walgreens, and 75% of that Walgreens is giving out free stuff. Okay, that's mandated stuff for us. The 25%, we got to balance the budget on. It's a very hard thing to do, and we need you people to help us with that. Some of this IM stuff and some of the W-2 things that are going on. I had a long talk with Mr. Jansen today at our Human Services, and we really need to work together with you guys and make sure those funds are there and they're not cut anymore. We can't do it anymore. I mean, I don't want our people in Kenosha to be having to call the state or not get any type of level of service that they've had. I think it's very important that they come into our job center, which Samantha has found out is it's like one of the jewels of our county, and we need to help our people, and they're struggling. And we can't have more cuts from the state on those programs. It's vital that we have the support on those programs. Mm-hmm. The IM program, the W-2 program, some other programs that we're asked to mandate and work together on. We need that support from the state. I mean, that's the second thing. I was going to go over unemployment. That varies time to time in the special session with the legislator. So, I mean, you guys have covered a lot of that. There's also, I got a call from a constituent on the WIDA program, reducing local input on the tax credits. I mean, people are reading stuff like that in the newspaper and saying, you know what, we don't get a voice on it. You got to make sure that, you know, they're represented in that area too. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That just came out. You guys haven't been in session, but that's something that we want to continue to have the local input on what's going where and that type of thing. That's what my constituents are saying to me. So those are, go ahead.
Well, let me point out another issue. I heard the president today in Iowa talking about 7,000 wind energy jobs. This governor came in and blew up a very delicate compromise that we had on siting wind around the state. And you might say, well, what does that have to do with us? Gateway trains people to work on those projects, and now the people that graduate from Gateway will have to go to other states like Iowa to get jobs because this governor blew up, and believe me, it was a very contentious compromise on siting, how far, stuff like that. So we took two giant steps backwards on the wind energy in the state on this governor. And I thought about it when I heard the president talk about 7,000 jobs. That's a lot of jobs in Iowa. And we could have had a number of more sightings in the state.
And Snap-on and other companies make the tools to tighten those huge nuts you see on the blades. The giant torque things, and Gateway trains them. It's a
Well, there's a so, other side to the wind energy. I didn't vote for that bill. And I didn't vote for that bill because of the personal property rights issue. And talking to people that live by the wind turbines, there is another side to that story.
We had a compromise, and, you know, some people just don't want any of them around. But let me tell you this. Farmers that are hurting with this drought, if they got wind on their land, they can pick up $50,000 a year in constant income that comes in. And that can really help when you have a drought, when you have consistent checks coming in, $50,000 or $60,000, $100,000.
Though sometimes in our county is a more populated county, and I don't, in talking with folks, there would be an area in our county where
you have a windmill. And I agree with Sam, because there's a certain strip of land in the state where it's good wind energy. I think it goes from Door County down to
Lake Michigan. Across,
those are jobs that we might get away from.
Well, let me speak to that, too, because I spent quite a bit of time, you know, working on this issue myself. And I do think it was incredibly short-sighted of the governor on this particular issue. The reason why I say that, you know, it passed last session with a two-thirds vote in the Assembly and the Senate. Every one of the leaders in both parties, you know, whether it be the both Fitzgeralds, Voss, Darling, all voted for it. And the governor came in and suspended it. Now, for all the reasons Bob articulated, which I think are right on target, but in addition to that, the other side of this is, I don't know if you realize, Supervisor Gentz, or Chairman Gentz, I should say, we send between $12 and $16 billion a year outside our state in order to power our plants and our homes. You know, Iowa gets 20% of their energy from wind energy. Wisconsin gets 2%. And we are in a good wind, you know, when you analyze the state, a lot of states, they can't benefit from that. There's certain zones, you know, such as the indicated, my wife's in the Fond du Lac area, and up through that area is actually a very good zone. They've got lots of wind farms there. But we actually had projects online. We had six different projects, and I'm not sure I'm going to get the exact number, but I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was like $4 billion of investment that was ready to be invested, got suspended, because despite the fact that two-thirds of the legislature, leaders of both parties wanted it, the governor suspended it. Now, I don't want to revisit the past, but since it was up, I just have to make sure that we at least understand why this is important. Going to your point, just to respond to a couple points that you raised there, which I couldn't agree more with, you know, the tech college, I think that was the governor's biggest mistake of all. You know, the session before, we had a deficit nearly twice as big as what we faced this session. And the two areas where we did not cut, one was the tech colleges, and the other one was the Commerce Department, which now is the Economic Development Corporation. The governor, to his credit, let me say this, he added more funds for WEDIC, which I thought was a good move on his part. I voted for the bill. It actually became a contentious issue in the 2nd Congressional District. One of the candidates criticized all his Democrats that supported the governor on that. But I made a commitment to the governor. Any bill he brought forward that would help create jobs, it didn't, you know, hurt workers or hurt the environment, I would support, and I stayed true to that personally. But the tech colleges, that's where I think he made a huge mistake, because of exactly the reasons you articulated so well, Chairman Gentz. You know, more than anything, we have to train people right now. And that's where, you know, with 2 million jobs in America where we have a skills shortage, that's where we're really falling short. So that was, I think, one of the more short-sighted issues, and I just hope the next session, regardless of who's in the majority of both houses, you know, I hope we can pass so that we can protect that budget and have some targeted initiatives to build upon it, you know, where you have a private-public partnership between the private sector identifying the needs and the tech colleges supplying the trained workforce to fulfill those needs.
Sure.
John, I've not heard this story about Caterpillar, that the loss of jobs to Texas when it shifted from Bucyrus Erie to Caterpillar.
Those are all welding jobs.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know what the facts are on that, who dropped the ball there.
Was a gentleman spoke at IMET.
Mm-hmm.
What was his name?
Tim Sullivan. He was Tim the CEO Sullivan. Of Bucyrus, and then Caterpillar bought him out. So he's discussed this before, that they wanted to expand here, but they didn't have the skilled workforce for those particular jobs.
But why does the state, Milwaukee County, who's dropping the ball? This is what I don't understand. It's like the University of Wisconsin has a great biotech department. We don't have biotech industry here. There isn't an Amgen. There isn't a Genentech. There's no Biogen. There's no Celgene here. Those companies are elsewhere, yet Wisconsin is one of the most prominent universities in that field. And
well, that's not exactly true.
It isn't. No. What are the great biotech industries in Wisconsin?
Well, they don't have a lot of names. A lot of them are so high tech, and they're smaller companies. They are. We had a biotech bill. It did pass this legislative session, but that all the heads of all these companies came to testify before the Financial Institutions Committee, and it was really quite remarkable. They're small companies. They're not big companies. They don't employ hundreds of people. They employ less than 50 in a lot of scientists.
I've rattled off the prominent ones and names in the country, and none of them are here. And it's just like Caterpillar. Just like Caterpillar, the ball is dropped by government officials, I think, at the state level. And this happens again and again and again and again in Wisconsin. That's what we're tired of.
But let me second one thing that Representative Kirkland said, which I agree with her completely. I think if you want to come up to Madison, I invite you, because this venture capital task force I served on that Secretary Buer chaired, he's no longer secretary. Now he's the president of the Wisconsin Research Technical Park, and they've got literally, I think actually, for certainly dozens, and I think actually closer to 150 companies. Now, you're right. Now, I will agree with one point you made. It's true, you know, when you name, we don't compete with the Silicon Valley. I mean, there's no question we can't fully compete with them. Stanford Research Institute, which I know quite a bit about because I'm on this International Society for Genomics, we can't fully compete with that, but Wisconsin actually is doing relatively well. Where we fall down actually is in venture capital, angel investments in venture capital, because what happens is when people bring forward these innovations, like Representative Kirkland said, you have 4 or 5 employees, they want to go to 20 or 30. When they have to go out and get dollars for their venture capital, you know, Wisconsin typically has had a much more conservative lending approach to things. Now, in some ways, I think that's not a bad thing, but it is bad when it comes to being able to spawn company growth. And, you know, and I could go on and on about, you know, some of the issues of the lending industry, which we don't have time for. But I do want to say that we actually, this is an area that we've done relatively well in, but we can do better. And that's where I would agree with you. You know, one of the other very important things I think we can do is have more public-private, you know, collaborative research. And the university's done relatively well at this, mainly because of WARF. You know, the Wisconsin Research Foundation at the University of Wisconsin-Madison is one of the best in the globe. One of the best in the country and one of the best in the globe. Now, one of the things that we did pass 3 years ago, which was primarily the innovation of Senator Lassa, and, you know, I know Senator Wirtz worked on this as well, which is the WISIS, you know, program, where we, you know, being on the board of University of Wisconsin-Parkside for many years now, what the goal is to try to replicate what WARF does with Madison at the cluster campuses. And that was one of the bills that we passed, which has provided that kind of infrastructure. Now, it's very modest for the cluster campuses. If Madison's up here, the cluster campuses are like here. So we can do much better, and we need to, because we want more collaborative research. But there has been, you know, some pretty good progress here, frankly.
Well, we certainly need it here in Kenosha, and it's Madison that's getting all of it.
That's true. That'll agree.
Their unemployment rate in the worst of times is under 5%.
That's true.
Supervisor Montemir?
I want to thank everyone, and I can tell by the passion that there isn't one person in this room who doesn't love Kenosha. And for that, I mean, truly, and sometimes, I mean, I'm new to politics, but the first thing I was taught is I cannot be partisan. And I have to work amongst people that might not feel the way I feel, but if there's something on the table, obviously we need to do it. Now, it's hard, but if you really love us and we need the people to stop suffering, then it'd be great if the leaders in this room become a little less partisan. Because you're only going to be looked at better in the state because you just won the recall. So whether you like it or not, the majority of the state prefers you listen to him. So be a little less partisan and help us. Literally help us. That's all you have to do. It doesn't matter. The tides might change in 2 years again, and we'll talk to the other group. But the one thing we can't do is this again. Everybody's crying about the last 2 years, and that's true, and we're all at fault. But I would love Kenosha leaders to be a little less democratic and a little less Republican. Who cares? Help us. I mean that.
Okay. Mike, did you have one of the final comments here, and then we'll wrap it up?
Just regarding the public-private collaboration that Representative Barker brought up, I just think that's really the thing that we should try to focus on as best we can. Like, I mean, if we could find a way to, you know, listen to these business CEOs, these business leaders, and say, hey, you know, what do you need, you know, in terms of, I know the training is a big thing, you know, that's something that would really be directly beneficial to economic development. I mean, and if we could get some of these companies that maybe they just need some trained workers, you know, maybe there's no doubt that maybe some public investment or public dollars is going to have to come somewhere, whether it be in training or, you know, investment. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if we could get some of these businesses, even less than 50 employees, growing, I mean, that could spawn growth. Potentially, mm-hmm. that could lead to business partnerships and even potentially bigger businesses coming in.
We are doing that now. Jim knows this. The village knows it. The city knows it.
Which is
working with CABA, we provide loans to these companies where sometimes they can't get loans otherwise. Low interest. They can create these jobs. They can grow. And a lot of times we get them to actually bring the rest of their company up here. More jobs, more trained, more employees, more everything. And that's a real benefit.
Well, good focus.
Let's be careful about these public-private ventures. Let's look back on the history. We had a scandal at Gateway on a public-private economic development. Sam Gordon was forced out because of that. We had three audits in that found tremendous waste of taxpayers' dollars. Now, what Sam didn't tell you is the new economic thing has had their scandal. They've just had a scandal, and pizza were of that, where they tipped off a company before they had the open bidding process out there. So some things that sound good, there can be mischief out there. I've heard Representative Barker talk about they just brought someone in with absolutely no experience to replace the person that was deposed out of that economic development thing. So we've been around for a while. We've seen the failures of that. And I was one of the three senators that went out to Gateway, and they had a public-private initiative out there where taxpayers put the money in, but then had no right to ask how the money was being spent. Now, we have a responsibility for accountability, and we started asking questions. See, Kenosha was the only one out of 72 counties with the tech system that was doing it that way. The red flag went up. So these public-private ventures can sound good, but we've had a number of scandals involved with them. Favoritism, waste of money, and stuff like that.
So I'm really glad.
We have to be careful. We have to be careful. I'm not saying it can't work, but we've had some bad experiences.
Let me just do one last response to your point, Mike, which I thought was a good one. When you talked about the idea of these smaller businesses, like with, you know, five employees, and if you can get them to expand, you know, I was at the SBA, of course, and we did regular studies. And where I think your insights are very good, are three-quarters of the jobs in America come from small businesses. It comes from smaller businesses of five people that grow to 10, that grow to 15, that grow to 20. And that's where I think there are a lot of opportunities. And, you know, just a second, one more point that you made when you talked about the public-private collaboration, I think to the degree to which we can try to provide more venues whereby private companies that need assistance, let's say to research a new innovation that they want to bring forward to market, you know, the more we can come up with tentacles to assist them through the research going on at the university system or with job training initiatives that you can, you know, have the Gateways of the world and the other technical colleges do, I think that really is very vitally important. So I do agree with your point on that. And certainly we need to try to, tackle that.
Well, I'm going to entertain a motion to adjourn after I allow Samantha to respond to a few items here.
Well, I just wanted to say, first of all, government doesn't create jobs.
That's what I mean.
So, you know, we have to create the economic climate. And one of the most recent job studies we have is improving our climate from like 46%, number 46 to 17. So we've made great strides in the last 2 years. On the Gateway thing, again, I'm just as concerned, too, about I actually talked to Dr. Gordon. Now, he hasn't lobbied me on the bills that Representative Barker talks about, but he's lobbied me on...
You mean Albrecht, right? Albrecht, not Borden. Right. Okay, I just want to make sure we're not...
Yeah. But these private partnerships are, these boot camps are very similar to what you audited, and what we, what the audit committee audited a few years back. So again, we have to keep watching the hen house and making sure the money is being used appropriately. Because I know IMET was funded through Johnson & Wax. It was an additional $1 million that they gave to them to help IMET come about. So again, we're all working together here, and it is, you know, again, as President Barker said, 71% of the businesses in Kenosha County are less than 10 employees.
Just one. I keep hearing government doesn't create jobs. It's unfortunate we keep hearing that all the time, but we play a big part in jobs coming to our area. We may not create them, but we sure lay the groundwork.
Yeah, the economic climate,
we do the infrastructure,
sure.
We do everything. Without that, people wouldn't show up in the middle of a field if there was nothing there. You know, all of us play a part in that.
And you know, you say we work together. We all work together for TIF bills, for Uline, for 800 jobs, and each one of us in this room work together to help Uline bring in those $40,000 to $60,000 jobs.
But also, Supervisor Monroe, you know, we certainly will keep trying harder. Well, we're like Avis. We're going to try harder.
Well, I want to, at this point, just thank you guys for coming in. I know you guys are very busy, and I appreciate you coming in and talking with us. I think this kind of dialogue is important. So at this point, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. It's been moved.
Seconded.
And seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Oh. Okay, where's the big election night party? Where are we headed?